want to go back a little bit, still in Parshas Kukas. Again, I hope you noticed when you learned the Parsha that the Torah literally skips 38 years in which nothing is described as happening. We have the Chet of the Meraglim. It was Nigzar that our forefathers would wander the desert for 40 years from Yetzias Mitzrayim. There is a machlok, as we discussed, when Korach happened. Korach might be the only Maisa. But the mitzvah of Parah Aduma is Shelo Keseder. In fact, the Chazal say the mitzvah of Parah Aduma is an example of Ein Muktam Umu'uchar Batorah, because we see that Parah Aduma was given earlier. Number one, according to one view in Chazal, the mitzvah of Parah Aduma was given all the way in the oasis of Mara, even before Matan Torah. But even if you don't go with that medrash, and Parshas Baloscha, before the Mishkan was put up, when Hashem commanded Moshe to purify the Levim, it says over there, Hazei Aleihem Mechata, sprinkle upon them the ashes of the Parah Aduma. Aye, the mitzvah of Parah Aduma wasn't given until later. The answer is that when it was given earlier, and it's only an example of the Torah not following chronological order. So literally, except for Korach, which might be the one exception, the Torah passes over in silence over 38 and a half years. The Torah only describes the events of the first year of the Exodus, and then the first year and a half, in other words, from Yetzias Mitzrayim until the Meraglim, and then it catapults you forward into the 40th year. Now, if you go back to Parshas Chukas, where indeed do we start with the 40th year? Meaning, where does the Torah skip? So really, if you look at Perek Chaf, Pasuk Aleph, right after Parah Aduma, the first thing it says is, Bnei Yisrael came to Midbar Tzin in the first month, that's the month of Nisan, and they stayed in Kadesh, and Miriam died in Kadesh, and she was buried. Now, the Torah doesn't tell you what year that was. In fact, that was in the 40th year. So, starting from that pasuk, we are now describing the events of the last year that the Jewish people wandered in the desert. And in the Torah, that year always begins from the month of Nisan. So Miriam died the first day of the 40th year. Okay, now it's interesting, you know, you don't even know this because it doesn't say what year Miriam died. But this is the Kabbalah of Chazal, and the Torah passes over in silence what happened for 38 and a half years. Because according to the Gemara in Yevamos, the Shekhinah did not speak to Moshe Rabbeinu for that entire period of time. In fact, the Gemara in Yevamos says that is why the Jewish people did not do Bris Milah for those 38 and a half years, because it was a sakana to do a Bris Milah unless they had a special healing wind that came in the wake of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's revelation to Moshe Rabbeinu. Nizufin Lamakam, they were excommunicated. But, so now I want to discuss, because this will be the prelude to Balak, what are the events that happened in year 40, right? Let's say you want to make a table of what happened in the final year. Because remember, year 40 starts Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and it takes us until the 7th of Adar, when Moshe Rabbeinu dies, and that's where the Torah ends. And then in the book of Yoshua, we read, you know, we mourn Moshe Rabbeinu for 30 days, and then we actually cross the Yarden on the 10th of Nisan, right? So the Torah is giving us the last year. So the first thing that happens is Miriam dies. Now, question number one is, why did Miriam die? Now, she was not a youngster. According to Chazal, she was 126, because Moshe was entering his 120th year. She was entering her 126th year because she was 6 years older, right? Miriam is 6 years older than Moshe. Aaron is 3 years older than Moshe. But why did she die? Bishlama, Moshe and Aaron died because of the chait of hitting the rock, which will be described after Miriam died. But what was the Siba for Miriam's death, right? It's a bit of a mystery. So there are different midrashim and mephorshim that try to answer exactly what was the chait that Miriam committed Now, of course, she did commit the chet of Lashon Hara, but the Torah does not indicate that she forfeited going to Eretz Yisrael. And if anything, Miriam got her punishment for that chet. That was the tzaras that she had for a week. And the Mitzayra is considered to be dead. So some want to give a very ingenious answer. That is, there actually seems to be a stira. We know from the Chumash itself that Moshe Rabbeinu died because of the sin he committed with the rock, and there are many different pshatim of what was the sin, but let's say, like Rashi says, he should have spoken to the rock, it would have been mighty water, instead he hit the rock. Okay. And in that chait, Aaron is also implicated. Now, even with there, you have a question. What did Aaron do wrong? All right, so Aaron should have stopped Moshe, Aaron should have spoken with Moshe, but be it as it may, the Torah absolutely identifies Moshe and Aaron as the sinners in the chait of Mei Meriva, the waters of strife. But Miriam herself is not identified as a sinner there. Right, so we still don't know why it was nixar that Miriam couldn't go to Eretz Yisrael. So someone to point out the following, a very, very fascinating point. Maybe it's a bit of a drush. There is another medrash that says that the reason Moshe Rabbeinu was punished, that he could not enter Eretz Yisrael, is because when, all the way back in Mitzrayim, when he first went to Paro, and Paro ordered, was said, you know, why are you complaining? You have too much time in your hands. So what did Paro say? That from now on, the slaves have to make the same quota of bricks, but they have to gather their own straw. And that made it much worse for them, much harder for them. And Moshe Rabbeinu went to Hashem and he said, Lama harei'isa li'am hazeh. Why did you make things worse? Lama zeh shalachtani. Why did you send me? Umeyaz basi el Paro. From the time I came to Paro, hey Rali Amaze, you made things bad. Vatzel lo itzalta, and you didn't save them. Remember, Moshe complained, and Hashem answers, "You will see what I will do to Paro." So there's a medrash that says, "You will see what I will do to Paro, but you will not see what I would do to the 31 kings of Canaan, because you're not going to merit to enter the land." That's a medrash. Now, from that medrash, that implies that Moshe was disabled from coming into the land because of his complaint of Lama Hariyosa Liyamazah. But the Chumash says Moshe was not able to go to the land because of the chait of hitting the rock. How could we make it a much earlier chait? So listen to this. This is really an ingenious teretz. Teretz is this. There's a famous statement in the Chavos HaLevavos, and it's quite amazing because Chavos HaLevavos was a Rishon, he was not a Chazal, and he says something that there's no Makar in Chazal Beferish. He just says the Chiddush, and you may have heard it, but it's from the Chavos HaLevavos, that when you speak Lashon Hara on somebody, you get their Averos, and they get your Mitzvahs. It's kind of an exchange. You get all the bad things they have, and they get all the good things you have. So it turns out like this. Moshe Rabbeinu's original chait was Lama Hariyaisa Liyam Hazeh. But when Miriam spoke Lashon Hara on Moshe, she got that Aveira. So Moshe now will be able to enter Eretz Yisrael, and Miriam will not be, because of the sin of Moshe Rabbeinu, which she acquired when she spoke Lashon Hara on Moshe. So Moshe needed, so to speak, an Avera that he committed after the Lashon Hara of Miriam, which he did right after the death of Miriam, which is a new Avera, where he and Aaron were both participants, in which there's a new Gezeira, right? So the very contradiction between the Medrash and the Chait Mei Meriva is in itself the answer of why Miriam did not enter Eretz Yisrael. Also, Lefi Pshuta, it could also have been a simpler explanation, that if Moshe would not enter Eretz Yisrael, but Miriam would, that would be a great humiliation and embarrassment. If the pshat is, all the leaders die, okay, so people don't necessarily look at Moshe Rabbeinu as a sinner. They'll just say, all right, the leaders died because we need new leadership, even though there was a chait of a davar. Masha'ein, if Miriam survives, that would make Moshe Rabbeinu look chas v'shalom like a rasha, and that could be the answer for Aaron as well, but okay. But be it as it may, So the first event that happens in the 40th year, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, is the death of Miriam. After the death of Miriam, what immediately happens is the traveling well stops giving water, because we know the man comes in the merit of Moshe, the Anana Yaakovot come in the merit of Aaron, who's also going to die in the 40th year, and the Be'er comes in the merit of Miriam, the Be'er stops. People complain. Moshe Rabbeinu, as it were, is told to speak to the rock. He does not speak to the rock, he hits the rock, and that is the chait of Mei Meriva, right? So the second event that happens is the incident of the waters of strife, in which it is decreed that Moshe Rabbeinu cannot enter Eretz Yisrael. Okay, the third event, one second. Yep. The third event that happens is the story of the Melech of Edom. So here, again, if you learn the Rashi, you would know this, but the Rashis are a little complicated. It would be good if I had a blackboard, a whiteboard, whatever it is. But here, you have to remember like this. When the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, if you can imagine a map, the easiest way to go to Eretz Yisrael would simply go due north along the coast of the Mediterranean. Don't have to go into the desert. Just go north, right? Egypt is south. Go north. Why didn't they go that direction? So the Torah says in the beginning of Bishalach that that is the land of the Plishtim. That is the land of the Philistines. The Philistines inhabited the Mediterranean coast. And if the Jewish people would have gone to the Mediterranean coast, they would have been so afraid of the Plishtim that they would have gone back to Mitzrayim. As it were, they were complaining about all the other nations, but the Plishtim would have been the worst. So as a result, instead of going due north, we go east, so to speak, and then we go east, and we think we're going to enter Eretz Yisrael from the south. Now the problem is, they cross the Red Sea, right, and we enter from the south. Now the problem is, directly to the south of Eretz Yisrael is the land of Esau, the land of Edom. This is the area called Mount Seir. Now Mount Seir is way south of the Dead Sea, right? And that is the land of Esav. Now at the northern tip of the land of Esav, right before you enter Eretz Yisrael, is the city called Kadesh. So we reached Kadesh. If Esav would have allowed us to go through his land, we just would have gone directly into Eretz Yisrael, and we would have entered around Beersheba. We would have entered north of the we would have entered actually close to Yerushalayim, north of the Dead Sea. Esav did not allow us to enter, so we had to go south, 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 and we had to go around the Dead Sea, and then go up north again, and that is why we crossed the Yarden from the east. Because otherwise, if you look at a map, it's very illogical. Egypt is to the west of Eretz Yisrael. Why are we crossing the Jordan from the east to the west? The answer is because of the detour that we had to go around the land of Esav, because they did not let us go through, although we offered to pay them with food and water. We paid them for everything. They refused, because once again, this is the hatred that Esav has for Yaakov. Now, Hashem could have said, go through anyway, wage war against Esav. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not want us to wage war against Esav, because there are three nations that we're not allowed to wage war against. The three nations are Edom, which is Esav, Ammon, and Moab. Esav, of course, is the son of Yaakov. Ammon and Moab are the children of the daughters of Lot, and therefore they're descended, they're connected to Avraham Avinu. Esav is south of Eretz Yisrael. Ammon and Moab are the east bank of the Jordan River, where Jordan and Syria are. And we are not allowed to wage war against them unless they attack us. We are not allowed to take their territory unless, once again, they attack us. Because the same way Hashem gave Eretz Yisrael to Am Yisrael, Hashem gave the lands of Edom, Ammon, and Moab to those nations. But Chazal tells an interesting thing. We know that Eretz Yisrael is often described as the land of the seven nations, right? The seven Canaanite nations. Chiti, Amori, Kanani, right? There's seven Canaanite nations. But if you look at the Bris Bein Absarit, the covenant of the parts, when Hashem promises Avram Avinu that your children will inherit the land, he mentions 10 nations. He mentions three more nations. Right? If you look at the Bris Bein Absarit in Parshas Lech Lecha, in Perek Tesvav, Pasuk Yitzchas, Bayomahu, that day, Karas Hashem es Avram, Bris Lamor, God made a covenant with Avram, Lezarecha Nasati es Haaretz Hazos, I have given you this land, Eretz Yisrael, and what are the boundaries? Much bigger than today's boundaries. Min Nahar Mitzrayim, from the Egyptian river. Now there's a machlokas what the Egyptian river is. Some say it's the Nile, and some say it's the Wadi Al-Arish of the Sinai, but it is certainly including the Sinai. Adonahar Gadol Nahar Pras, until the Euphrates River, which is all the way up in Iraq. And what are the nations? The lands of the Cani, the Kenizi, the Kadmoni, the Chiti, the Prizi, Rephaim, Ha'amairi, Kanani, Ha'girgashi, Ha'yavusi. These are 10 nations. Now, normally we say Eretz Canaan has 7 nations. What are these 10 nations? So Chazal say the first three, Cani, Kenizi, Kadmoni, are alternative names for Esav, Ammon, and Moab. And that is, although Bizman Hazan, Bizman of the Torah, we were not allowed to fight and take their land, but liyasid lava limosa Moshiach, the land of Esav, Ammon, and Moab will be given to us as well. And that is the difference between the 7 nations. In other words, in this world, or in this existence, we only get the land of 7 nations. Liyasid lava, we will get the land of 10 nations. But for now, Esav, Edom, Ammon, Moab has to belong to their land. So, in the Chumash, it is only recorded that we wanted to go through Esav's land, and they did not let us. So as a result, we had to go south. We had to go around all of Esav's land. That means we went south of the Dead Sea, and we turned around. We went under the Dead Sea, south of the Dead Sea. Then we had to go north. Now, for some reason, and this is not so pashut, if you read Parshas Devarim, where Moshe is reviewing the events, right, in Bamidbar they are happening, but in Parshas Devarim he's reviewing them, and it's the same year, it's not so much later, because this is an event that he's reviewing that same year. He mentions that there was another nation that we wanted to go through, that we were not given permission to go through, and that is, we wanted to go through the nations of Ammon, Moab, and then Ammon. So here you have to have a little bit of a picture of what happens. You have Eretz Yisrael. To the south of Eretz Yisrael is Edom. So we have to go around the land of Edom through the Mediterranean, the Dead Sea. We now come up north, and as you know, the Jordan River flows into the Dead Sea. So when you go north, you know, you're going to hit the Jordan River, but we could have entered Eretz Yisrael at an earlier point, because when you round about, right, you have Edom to the south, and then to the east, north of Edom, is the land of Moab, and the land of Moab extends from the southern tip of the Dead Sea until a certain river that runs into the Dead Sea, which is called Nachal Arnon. That is a big river. It flows into the Dead Sea. Nothing flows out of the Dead Sea. In fact, people like to say the Dead Sea is called dead because it only takes and it doesn't give. The water flows into the Dead Sea. Right? So you have the Dead Sea, Yam HaMelech, and coming out of the middle of the Dead Sea or flowing into the middle of the Dead Sea is Nachal Arnon. Nachal Arnon is the land of Moab. So we could have gone into Eretz Yisrael through the land of Moab. But they did not give us permission to enter. So we go a little north of Nachal Arnon, and then we face the land of Ammon, which also does not let us go in. But then we go further, and we have the land of Sichon, the king of the Amori, one of the seven nations. And when he does not let us go in, we wage war, and we conquer that land. And that land on the east bank of the Yarden is divided among the two tribes, the two and a half tribes. Well, the two tribes, actually. That land is like Reuven and Gad. And then the land of Og, which is further north, is given to, again, the half tribe of Menashe. So, here's the interesting point. We actually had four different countries we wanted to cut through. We wanted to cut through Esav. When they refused, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, just go around. Moab, don't wage war with them. Ammon, don't wage war with them. When Sichon refuses, that we go ahead and wage war, because even though this is not Eretz Yisrael proper, he is one of the seven nations. Now, what's interesting is, the Torah itself says that Sichon had conquered this territory from Moab. So the territory of the two and a half tribes that we conquered from Sichon Melech Amori had actually been part of Moab, and Sichon conquered it from Moab. So from here we learn out, the Gemara says, a very, very important klal. The Gemara in Gittin says, because we're not allowed to wage war with Moab, and we're not allowed to take their territory. So how could we conquer land from Sichon? Answer, Ammon u'Moav, the lands of Ammon and Moab, Tiharu, became purified, b'Sichon, through Sichon. What does that mean? This is a principle that the Torah recognizes, the idea of military conquest. Even though we're not allowed to conquer, we ourselves are not allowed to take Moabite territory, but once Sichon took it, it was no longer Moabite territory, it was halachically Amori territory. And even though we cannot take Moabite territory, we are allowed to take Amori territory. Very interesting point. This is a very major aspect of international law, that the Torah recognizes, even among Goyim, the legitimacy of military conquest as occupation. Because that was the halachic heter for us, to conquer the land from Sichon, even though it was originally Moabite territory that we're not allowed to conquer. This is called Ammon u'Moab Tiharu b'Sichon, and that became the land eventually of the two and a half tribes that we're going to see later. Now, because of this idea that we wanted to go through Edom and they didn't let us, and we wanted to go through Moab and Ammon and they didn't let us, that now brings us to the idea that Balak, the king of Moab, was very fearful of the Jewish people, and he hired a professional sorcerer, Bilam, to curse them, and the story goes that all of his curses turned into blessings. So here there's a very, very simple question. What is Balak afraid of? God commanded the Jewish people not to wage war with Moab. God commanded the Jewish people not to enter Moabite territory if the Moabites don't want. So why does Balak feel a compunction to hire somebody to curse Bnei Yisrael if under no circumstances do the Jewish people pose a threat? Now again, if you read the Chumash does not say directly, here, don't wage war against Moab, but in Parshas Devarim, it does say that exactly. Why it's not written here is a bit of a problem, but nevertheless, it's absolutely clear that Bnei Yisrael were commanded, Al Tatsar Es Moab, do do not wage war against Moloch. So what is Balak afraid of? Well, one answer might be that maybe Balak is not aware of this. Balak gets a request from a nation of 3 million people, no, 600,000 men, 3 million people, to cross into his land. He's afraid if he says no, they're just going to attack him. He doesn't know, perhaps, that Moshe Rabbeinu was given that command. So Mamela, he's afraid he needs to take the law into his own hands. But why wouldn't Moshe Rabbeinu tell him? So the Shema Shmuel actually says that what Balak, and it does say Balak is afraid, but Vayogar, right? Balak, or Moab is afraid. What are they afraid of? So the Shema Shmuel says very beautifully that Balak and the Moabites are not afraid of Bnei Yisrael attacking them or waging war. They are afraid of Bnei Yisrael coming into the land of Israel. And the purpose of Bilam is to stop them from entering Eretz Yisrael. Why is that so? Because there's a fundamental difference between life in the desert and life in Eretz Yisrael. Now, we spoke about this many times already. Life in the Midbar is a miraculous life. It's a life where the man comes from heaven, the water comes from a be'er, anane akavot. You're hermetically sealed in a cocoon of ruchnius. The yad of Hashem is revealed, open, miraculous. Your only responsibility is to learn Torah, do mitzvahs. So it is not what you might call real life. So when corrupt and degenerate nations like Moab look at the Jewish people, they can say, oh, they can serve Hashem because they don't have real problems. They don't have to struggle with Parnassa. They don't have to be concerned with diplomatic relations. They don't have to drain the swamps. They don't have to plant fields. They don't have to have businesses. So yeah, they can serve God like somebody in a monastery. And therefore, the existence of Am Yisrael is not a reproach to them. Because they could look at Am Yisrael and they could dismiss it as an irrelevancy. Yeah, what they can do is what they can do. That has no shaychus to us. But once the Jewish people come to Eretz Yisrael, and the Jewish people themselves have to fight wars and build cities and cultivate their food and have lawyers and accountants and doctors and have international relations and engage in dangerous wars, and they will still keep the Torah. That will be showing the world that one could be moral and holy and God conscious even in the middle of all of the problems of everyday life. That becomes a reproach, and that becomes a mussar on all the Umos HaOlam that are following the corrupt ways of Avodah Zarah. And therefore, it's not that Balak was afraid that something would happen to the Moabite nation. He just didn't want for the Jewish people to enter Eretz Yisrael, because that would show the world that you could worship God, even in Gashmias, even in physicality, even in materialism, even in Hester Punim. And therefore it was Balak's goal in hiring Bilam that the Jewish people would be cursed, that they would not be able to enter Eretz Yisrael. Again, we'll talk later about the details of the story of Bilam, but it's, again, it's important to remember that although there were three nations that refused entry to the Jewish people, Edom to the south, and Moab and Ammon to the east, northeast, and that's why we have to go north of that. Sichon is north of that, and that's why we entered around Yericho. Right? That's why we crossed the Yarden from the east, because we have to go all the way north of the Dead Sea till we reach Yericho. But although there were three nations that didn't allow us to enter, only two of the nations got punished for that. The Torah says about Esav, just like it says of Mitzrayim, you shall not despise an Edomite, because he is your brother. And even though if an Edomite converts to Judaism, you don't marry the first generation, and you don't marry the second generation, but you are allowed to marry the third generation. The identical rule is true for an ancient Egyptian. The first generation convert is not admitted into Am Yisrael, they have to marry each other. The second generation is not admitted, but the third generation is admitted. The two nations that have this rule are nations that we would think are pretty bad, Mitzri and Edomi. And quite amazingly, the Torah says on both of them, Do not hate the Egyptian, for you were strangers in their lands. They took care of you for 210 years. Very strange. Do not hate the Edomites, for he is your brother. And therefore they can enter Klal Yisrael, the third generation. By contrast, when it comes to Ammon and Moab, the Torah says, Beferish, an Ammoni and a Moabi cannot enter the congregation of Hashem, even when they convert, that means, no matter how many generations. It says 10 generations, but that means forever. Now, it's true that each one has a Kula and a Chumra. Ammon has a Kula, Ammon and Moab have a Kula that women are permitted right away. It's only the men who are forbidden and not the women. As opposed to Mitzri and Adomi, both men and women are prohibited until the third generation. So the Kula of the Mitzri and the Adomi is they're permitted after three generations. The Chumra is that for the first two generations, even women are forbidden. As opposed to Ammon and Moab, where the Chumra is the men are forbidden forever, but the women are permitted right away. That's why Rus the Moabite was able to marry Boaz, and from that marriage came David HaMelech. So why is the Torah so rough? Egypt, we kind of give a relatively free pass. Hey, they took care of you. They gave you bread and water for 210 years. Edom, he's your brother. How can you be mean to your brother? So what is so bad about Ammon and Moab? So the Torah gives two reasons. Reason number one, they did not give you food and water when you requested it when you're traveling in the desert. And reason number two is they hired Bilam ben Beor to curse you, and God turned the curse into a blessing. Now, all in all, there are nations that seem to be worse, because Moab's sin was an act of omission. They didn't give us food and water. And even the second reason, they hired Bilam to curse us, but the curse didn't do anything. As opposed to Egypt that enslaved us, and as opposed to Esav that wanted to kill us. And remember, from Esav comes Amalek. Amalek is Esav's grandson. So why is Ammon and Moab treated worse than any of the other nations? So the Svarim tell us a very important idea, and that is that Esav does hate us, and Esav tries to destroy us, but Esav has a good reason. Yaakov took the brachos from Esav, right? The hatred of Esav, not that it's justified, but it can be understood. Ammon and Moab is exactly the opposite. Ammon and Moab come from Lot, and Avram only showed kindness to Lot. And therefore, Ammon and Moab should have hakaras hatov, gratitude to Am Yisrael. And their cruelty is not just cruelty. It is a lack of gratitude for chesed. And hakaras hatov is such an important midah for Am Yisrael that any nation that does not have hakaras hatov, by definition, cannot be a Jew, cannot be a member of Klal Yisrael. Even Esav is not as bad as Ammon and Moab. Esav has nothing to be grateful for. I mean, Esav lost everything that he would have gotten. So no, he's mad at us. He's angry at us. He didn't deserve it. And what happened to him is proper. He didn't deserve the brachos. But Lamaisa, he lost something. So Esav hates us because of the bad things that we did to him. But Ammon and Moab hates us because they lack gratitude in Hakaras Hatov. And there is nothing as debasing as a lack of gratitude. The very word Yehudi comes from the term being grateful. And therefore, the lack of Hakaras Hatov passels Ammon and Moab, Ledore Doris. Okay, we'll stop here after.
We're learning now, like in Musa Shua.
Yeah.
And they're like, this